Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Can we be there?
We are here.
Think of the time.
You don't have to think about it. It's right here. It's right now.
That's the difference, Zach. That's the difference.
Go ahead.
Said you now,
go ahead.
I mean,
because I'm really not going to disagree with you a lot here. In a certain measure, I am. But go ahead.
Well, you know what happened last night in basketball happens in football all the time. And I understand it's a superstar in Kevin Durant. It would be like, you know, right now, like a Tom Brady blowing when he blew out his knee. But
in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. 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 But, you know, it happens all the time in football. All the time. And it's a shame the way that it happened and to such a good basketball player. But look, I mean, that's part of sports. It's part of sports. Injuries happen. And I think now when you look at what happened last night, it's going to change how basketball players approach free agency and approach their contracts and their situations.
Okay, tell me why.
Well, when was KD a free agent? Was it a couple years ago?
Yeah.
And so he could have signed a 5-year max deal or whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm. He could have, yeah.
He chose to sign a what? 2-year deal?
With
a
player
option.
It was
a 1-on-1 player option.
Player option.
Player option. Right.
Right.
And so basketball players, because of the low risk of long term injury or an injury, they bet on themselves more than football players usually do because of the injury rate in football. But now you look at KD's situation, will other guys take notice and say, doing this 1-by-1 or this 2-year deal, kind of like a team-friendly deal for Golden State, and so I can have my options, maybe might not be the best for me.
Interesting.
Because you see what happened to KD. How will that affect his free agency this year?
Well, hold on. Before we go there, just to piggyback on what you're saying, there's another recent example with DeMarcus Cousins, that this guy and Isaiah Thomas, go ahead and mix him in here.
Yeah.
These guys that are on the precipice of signing these major deals who, you know, suffer these injuries and it derails their financial future.
Yeah.
So interesting
do you,
point.
Do you think that basketball players will now look at this and say, you know what, I'm not going to be doing this 1-by-1, this 2-year deal. I'm gonna go for more of the security, the long term deal, and I'm gonna go for the 5-year max deal or whatever it is, that more long term contract. And you saw LeBron doing the 1-year mm-hmm, deal mm-hmm. with Miami.
Yep.
And obviously KD's still gonna get paid, but it's gonna be really interesting to see how it plays out for him. I'm just wondering if it changes some of these guys' approach when it comes to how they handle free agency, and are they still willing to gamble on themselves? Like you said, Isaiah Thomas and DeMarcus Cousins, who we saw play last night also,
yep.
Coming back from an Achilles. How much do you take that risk now?
It's a very interesting question.
Look at DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, he's not going to make anything anymore.
Not even close.
He was hoping to have a bounce back year, but he is not a shell of himself.
Yeah, he literally... The reality with DeMarcus Cousins, and I never thought that I would say this when he is in his 20s, he literally plays below the rim.
Yeah.
He does not play above the rim anymore. And you pull up highlights of him in Sacramento, he was a dominant physical force, like almost like a baby Shaq, that it was an incredible athlete with great footwork. And now it looks totally different.
And he'll never be the same.
No. Nope. Nope, he could look better, and I think he will, but he'll never look the same. It's a good question
by
you.
He'll never be a max guy. I mean, that's not even the conversation.
No.
You know?
Nope.
And I don't even know if he'll, I mean, what did he sign, like a 1-year, $14 million deal with Golden State?
It was a 1-year basically prove-it deal like Isaiah Thomas signed.
I don't think he'll ever get that type of contract again.
Probably not.
I mean, he's a bad fit on that team to start
yep.
with, but that type of deal, I just, you look at his injury, you look at KD, you look at Isaiah Thomas and what happened with his back, and I think guys take notice and you'll see less of those, and agents certainly will take notice and say, wow. You know, let's go for the security here.
Interesting. What were your thoughts about the game in general?
I mean, I was bummed out. I was hoping Toronto would finish them off. They had them on the ropes, up 6 with, a few minutes left with the ball. called timeout, came out, had an awful possession, and
that's being questioned in a major way.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
What is the timeout?
Nick Nurse's timeout. Kawhi Leonard scores 10 straight. The city's on fire.
Yeah.
And you call that timeout. Since that timeout, they went 1-for-9 from the field, and the Warriors went 3-for-3 from the field, all from three.
Yeah. I didn't mind the timeout. I got to be honest. I didn't mind it when it happened because I think in certain situations, when you're running hot, you know, you just kind of maybe are too confident. And I think at that moment, it was a good time to say, hey, let's relax here. We're up 6. Okay, let's make sure every possession counts. Every possession matters. All right, let's not think that we got this thing won. You got to hammer that home with guys, you know. And I think that was a good time to do it. So I didn't mind it. Look, it didn't work out. So it looks bad.
Yeah.
And as a coach at the time when it happened, I said I don't mind that timeout. I actually like that timeout. I wish more coaches would do it in those moments because sometimes I think guys just get lost and don't realize the situation you're in, how much time is on the clock, and they take a bad shot. This way you can get a play, set up the play, and hopefully get a good shot, which they didn't do. So it ends up looking like it wasn't the right move, but I thought in the time that it was a good move, but it obviously wasn't.
And the results ultimately like conclude how you feel about it. Like retroactively, you look right back because it didn't work out. Well, right. Now you're the GOAT.
Right.
Right,
and that's what happens when you're the coach. You got to make moves at the time you think are right, and if they don't work out, you look foolish, and it's the wrong move. If they do, you look great, and you know you're Brad Stevens. What an inbound play,
because
guy makes a shot. If he misses, it's like whatever. So I didn't mind it at the time. And then, you know, Clay and Steph hit big threes there at the end.
Huge threes.
So, look, if those guys don't make the threes, then it's really a moot point. But they did. They did. And so those guys made plays. You got to give them credit. Toronto's defense wasn't as sharp as it needed to be late in the game. And give Golden State, again, credit for how they handled playing defense late in the game, doubling Kawhi, making him get rid of it, and not enough time for him to get the ball back. And Van Bleek, you know, he didn't know what to do with the darn thing. But that being said,
they still, it looked like they were still going to get an open three to potentially win it. Kyle Lowry deep in the left corner. And you got to take your hat off to Draymond Green, who had the best rotation of the night. The reason that Lowry is shooting that basketball 5-6 feet up from the corner and the ball lands behind the backboard because Draymond got a finger on it. And it was late in the postgame after Scott Van Pelt, when they went to SportsCenter LA, and it's like an hour and a half after the game's over, Legler broke that down. And it was just so incredibly impressive how Draymond is behind who was it down there? Was it Gasol? He's behind Gasol. And as the pass is snapping to the deep left corner, he gets himself around Gasol and gets his hand out on the closeout. It was beyond impressive effort. And just, you know what? I boil it down to championship level DNA for Clay, for Steph, for Draymond, but also for a guy like Quinn Cook, who, you know what? You say, who's Quinn Cook? This guy has routinely throughout these playoffs hit big shots, and he did it again last night. I can't Stoke, I'm so impressed with this Warriors team. Looney's banged up. Clay has missed games. KD has missed the whole series. Boogie coming back from injury within the playoffs. I mean, it's just I'm very impressed. Very impressed.
I don't know if I'm impressed, but you know, they played well last night. I mean, they won what, I mean, four out of the last six. I mean, so I'm not really overly impressed by that. I mean, they're very talented. It's not like a shock. You know, I think that they play better when KD goes out. They're like, okay, we got our band back together. Let's prove to everybody that we can still get it done. And, you know, can they do it here on out in the next two games? I don't think they can.
I don't think they can either.
So I said yesterday, if they win, they're winning the series. But now without KD, I don't think they can win it.
We have some more thoughts on that for sure, and we will return to it. But the Rockies win their ninth straight game at home against those Chicago Cubs. There are a handful of takeaways from last night's game, and we'll tackle them next.
To deep left. Take a good look. You won't see that fall. Concourse shot for Desmond. And the Rockies lead it 5-4.
A concourse shot. Or as Drew Goodman would later say on the broadcast, he hit it to Fort Collins. The longest home run in Major League Baseball this year. Unbelievable. 486 feet for a guy who, you know, has been much maligned around here. Ian Desmond, along with Charlie Blackman, along with Nolan Arenado, going yard last night in a nail biter. And it was a Ryan McMahon single in the bottom of the eighth that drives in Daniel Murphy and ultimately leads to a 6-5 series opening win here at Coors Field. The ninth consecutive win here at home for the Rocks, Stoke.
Yeah, big win. Big win. Way to start the series off. You had your ace on the mound. You've lost two series in a row. You want to get off to a fast start at home in this series against the Cubs, and they did it. You know, you fall behind 4-0 in the third. You find a way in the bottom half of the third to go have two home runs, two-run home runs.
That's right.
And you score one there in the seventh. You give it up in the eighth, and then in the bottom half of the eighth, like you said. So just they score again for the winner. And then Wade Davis, nice to see him come in and close the game out. So that was good. Sneaky big win. I know it's still really early, but I you want to set the tone early in these series, especially at home, and you just don't want to lose with your ace on the mound,
right?
Especially after losing two out of three of a week ago to them. So, good job, Rockies, finding a way to win that baseball game when it looked like a few different times that they weren't going to be able to do it,
right? And yeah, just lost a game like it on, what was it, maybe Thursday night to the Cubs? No, it was Wednesday, last Wednesday, I believe it was, and in a tight one that was 9-8. And this was the same type of game where it was going to go either way. And, you know, a D-Mac and other guys, they have that phrase where you're going to have, what is it, you're going to have... you're going to have 40 losses and 40 wins, and the rest is in between, like those games or whatever that is. This is one of those in-between games.
Yeah.
And you're right. The fact that you had Marquez on the mound to start the series, think about the taste in our mouth today. If you lose that game at home to kick off the series, you know, you take it on the chin, and you're looking ahead and going, oh, man, we got the kid on the mound
tonight. Right.
Lambert, and okay, hopefully Senzatella can, you know, bring it up the rear in game three. But it's infinitely different today after that a terrific win, a really, really good home win against a team that you just played in the wild card a year ago.
Yeah, good baseball team. And like you said, you made a really good point. You know, when you look at who you have pitching tonight and with Lambert on the mound, to me, it's going to be really, really interesting to see what kind of adjustments the Cubs make. You know, nobody's seen him pitch in the major leagues last week. So, you know, a lot was learned from those guys, and now they get to see him a week later.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of adjustments he makes and what kind of adjustments the Cubs make and still see if he can dominate them like he dominated them last week in his first ever start.
It's a good question.
And when he was brilliant, flat out brilliant. Can he do that again, or, you know, will their adjustments be good enough to get after him? Or is this stuff just so good that it doesn't matter what they do, this kid's just really, really good? So for me, that's an interesting storyline in this game to see how the young kid reacts and how the Cubs react to him, having seen him just a week ago.
It is unusual. Like, he starts his career impromptu on a Thursday against the Cubs and then turns around in his second start ever the following Tuesday, and it's against those same Cubs. My gut tells me it's not going to go great for this kid tonight.
And
I wanted to, obviously.
It doesn't sound like you wanted to.
Oh, stop it. Of course I do.
Do you not like him?
No, you are such a jerk. I just don't like the construct of how it's happening here. Like, your second start ever is against the same lineup that got to see you two or three times too, less than a week ago. We're talking 5 days difference here. I just don't like it. Going up against, you know, the likes of those Cubs who, you know, have a terrific lineup in their own right. Like, you're going to give Kyle Schwarber a sixth, a seventh, an eighth opportunity within a five-day span. Yeah, and they are. That's what I'm saying. Like, you're going to give, you know, these Javier Baez, you're going to give him a sixth, seventh, and eighth opportunity in this kid's second start within a five-day span. I just don't like the construct of how it's happening here. I'm wishing the kid the best. But
doesn't sound like it.
But I'm
just go ahead and pick the Cubs and tell us you're pulling for the Cubs.
You are really something.
Holy cow. I'm interested to see. Obviously.
Yes, so am I. I'm interested to see.
But I mean, like, you're already giving the Cubs a win. You're like, it ain't going to go good for him, let me tell you.
I don't like the feel of it.
Huh?
I don't like the feel of it. Just like the order of operations for the kid.
Okay. I don't mind the feel of it. I think that, if he's the real deal, he'll go out there and battle and do well. And even if he struggles, it doesn't mean that he's not the real deal. But I think he's going to go out there and pitch solid. He's probably confident going up against these guys. But it's going to be interesting to see how well he does and what kind of adjustments they make. And, you know, if he can have another performance like he did. I mean, how many strikeouts did he have?
I think it was nine. Franchise record.
Nine. Yeah. So, you know, will he have that kind of success tonight? It's going to be fun to watch. I can't wait to watch him pitch. The place should be packed. The place should be rocking. Yeah. It's going to be a great night.
It's a great crowd last night, too.
Yeah, you get to watch this kid pitch. You know, Cubs fans will be in the house. So it's going to be a fun one to watch.
Did you see Nolan's glove flip?
I did.
Unbelievable.
Pretty cool.
To a McMahon bare hand.
Pretty cool.
To get cargo out at second. I mean, just the whole, like, the bing, bang, boom of it all was just awesome. And once in a while, we'll see a highlight and be like, you know what, that's going to get lost with the rest of them. That one may stick out. That one may stick out. When they show 40 clips of him as he's going into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 15 years, that may make the highlight.
I didn't think it was one of his best.
Really?
No, I did. I got it. I'll look at it again. I watched it last night really quick. I'll look at it again and I'll give you my verdict, but I didn't first time watching come away like, oh my gosh, that's one of his best. Okay. Now he set the bar. Why are you looking at me like that?
Cause you're down.
No, I'm not.
Cause you're down on Nolan.
No, I'm not. He set the bar really, really high, right? I mean, he's made a lot of great plays and I don't think that's up there with some of the great ones that he's made, but I'm going to watch it again in the break.
Okay. Do us
and
that
I'll,
favor.
And I'll get back to you on it. If my second view of it is the same as my first.
Okay. All right.
All right.
One host on the station.
I got more confidence in you, Peter Lambert, than Zach Biden. Don't worry, buddy. You're going to go out there and do great tonight.
My goodness.
Don't listen to him.
We're off and running here. One
if
host.
You have hate in your heart, let it out.
One host on this station. How about this? Make sure you're buckled in. Believes the Broncos could be 5 wins better than a year ago? Play a little game of who said what next. One host on this station believes that the Denver Broncos could be not 1, not 2, not 3, not 4, but 5 wins better than a year ago. It was Nick Ferguson of the Safety Blitz who filled in on the morning show this morning, was hanging out with Mike Evans, and he was buzzing, Stoke, with optimism. He's gushing about the Broncos and what their potential can be this year. And he began by saying that the Broncos will, in fact, start the season 4-0. Check this out.
As I break down this Broncos schedule, when I break it down in quarters, as though we would do during the season, I really feel as though this Broncos teams have the capability of winning more than 8 games. I mean, that's not unrealistic to see that, because when I look at the first quarter, you have Oakland, you're at Oakland, Chicago, at Green Bay, and Jacksonville. And the first 4 games, you're playing against a top-notch defense in the Chicago Bears and the Jacksonville Jaguars. But for me, even with the outside media saying there's a lot of uncertainty swirling around this Broncos team because of Joe Flacco, I'm still going to start them off in that first quarter 4-0.
That was Nick, and he went on to say, because I was listening this morning in the 6 a.m. hour when he was going off on this. He's saying the Raiders are they're an implosion waiting to happen.
Were you up that early?
I was.
What were you doing?
Why? Let's change the diaper. How about that?
There you go. I know you wanted to say why you're up.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, you did. You wanted to tell us. You're taking care of your kid.
Yeah, you know, I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I had to get the kid, you know, so I was listening to him in the 6 o'clock hour.
Zach's the perfect guy because he is a grinder. He's on every day.
Thank you, Coach. That's such a good clip. All right, so he was saying, Nick was saying, like, look, the Raiders are in a rebuild process. Tons of new pieces. You got Incognito and Brown, all these personalities from the jump. He thinks they're going to start slow. The Bears, he believes that Vic has a deep understanding of who they are and will be able to scheme up around them, and sort of provided a pretty good rationale for that.
Okay.
He said at Green Bay week three, he's been playing Green Bay twice a year and has, you know, intimate knowledge of how to stop them as well.
Well, Vic ain't playing.
That's right. Well,
so let's not forget that he's coaching. So,
I'm just telling you what Nick was saying. Okay. He'd be able to uniquely scheme it up because, again, he knows them like the back of his hand.
Sure.
And then finally, Jacksonville here, week four.
Playing at home.
Playing at home. You should be able to win that game. Is he crazy?
Yeah. He's a little crazy. I like his rationale, though. Like, he's got valid points. When you talk about Chicago and the Packers. Now, I don't think they're going to go in Lambeau and beat Green Bay.
Why not?
Because it's a tough place to play. You're going on the road. I mean, could they? Yeah. But, I mean, right now, as we sit here today, I don't have them winning that game. And I don't have them beating the Raiders.
I just want to say this. The Packers won the same amount of games last year as the Broncos did.
Okay, I know.
I'm just providing some context here. Right. It's not like
the Aaron Rodgers played 16?
He came darn close, didn't he? I got it right here.
I blame their coach.
Aaron Rodgers played all 16.
I blame their coach.
You blame Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, and so do the Packers. That's why they fired him.
Okay.
I think it was a bit of a mess there.
By the way, I have to say this. Do you realize that Aaron Rodgers played all 16 games and threw just 2 interceptions?
Really? I didn't think he had that great a year. I thought he missed some games. That was the year before.
It was the year before.
Didn't he break his collarbone like 4 times 2 years ago?
Something like that.
Like 4 times. Just like, how do you break your collarbone so many
times?
Every
quarter of his neck is broken.
Couple weeks later, here he comes. He's back.
He threw the football 597 times.
2 interceptions?
Threw 2 picks and threw 25 touchdowns. Holy jumping. That is insane. I'm sorry. I had to say that.
No, that is. But that's a tough place to play regardless. And they got a top flight quarterback. So I think they're going to be a better team. I think the Broncos will be a little better team. So I give the edge to the home team. But certainly Vic, coaching in the same division as the Bears and the Packers, knows those teams really, really well. But the thing with the Packers that Nick didn't bring up, they got a different scheme this year. They got a different head coach this year.
Matt LaFleur?
Yeah. So he knows their personnel, but he's not going to know what that scheme looks like. Now, when you look at Chicago, Matt Nagy's offensive coordinator. That's the head coach. So Vic will have, you know, he'll know that guy like the back of his hand. I mean, they practice against each other every day in training camp.
Right.
Off-season, everything. So he knows what Nagy likes to do. So I'll give Vic the edge there. And he knows their personnel really, really well. And it's going to be interesting to see how that defense looks without Vic Fangio. They got Chuck Pagano now, I believe, and I think he's going to do a great job. But it's going to be interesting to see if they are play at the same level.
No, I'm just smiling at a RamosLaw.com text, 303-713-1043. Someone says if the Broncos leave on Friday, they'll beat Green Bay. If they leave on Saturday, they'll lose. That's Shout out, VJ.
That's right.
That's from Trip. Is Vic going to leave on Friday or Saturday?
Let's leave on Friday, Vic. Leave on Friday, buddy. I'm just telling you, it helps. I don't think they're beating the Raiders. Week one.
You've been saying that all along.
Right.
You haven't been able to win in Oakland in years. Haven't swept Oakland in years.
Right. I don't see that happening. First game of the year. I give the edge to the coach that's been there the longest, and that's Chuck. Chucky. And you know, their quarterback's in the same system going into year two. I know they have a lot of changes going on there, but I just think the Broncos' start is a little bit slower than the Raiders' start, and the Raiders are playing at home. And a close one, the Raiders win it. I give the edge to them week one. So I look at the Broncos, and I think they're probably after four games, they're probably 2-2.
2-2 with wins against the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Bears?
Yeah, I'll give them the, right now, I'll give them the two wins at home. And I think you ought to take 2-2 and be thrilled about it. Okay, because.
Be thrilled about 2-2.
Yes, yes, because.
Under the table fist bumps.
Yes, under the table, like two. Yep, there we go. We're on track for 8-8.
Secret
track
knuckles.
For 8-8. Yep,
secret
yep.
knuckles.
Yep, give that little point with the little finger.
A wink, wink, we did it.
Yes.
We're back.
Because, you know, Nick's saying 4-0, but the thing could be flipped too. Follow me?
Pretty easy to follow.
You know what I'm talking about, flipped?
So if I were to flip 4-0.
Yeah. Flip it for me.
So you flip it.
See if you can do this. Take your time.
And the O goes in front.
Yes.
With a dash. Yep. Then the 4 goes in the back.
Look at you.
So the Broncos
nailed it.
Don't win a game for the first 4.
Look at you.
Oh, you flipped it.
Yep. You did it. You nailed it. I doubted you. I did. I doubted you. But you persevered.
There is.
That's what I'm.
It is hard for me to imagine the Broncos going 0-4.
It's hard for me to imagine them going 4-0. Which one's more likely? To me, more likely is 0-4.
To me, more likely is 0-4 as well. I don't think that's going to be the case. I don't think it's going to be any of the extremes.
I don't think so either. But I'm thinking a 2-2 start with all the changes we've had would be a good, solid start for this team.
Hey, got to the quarter of the season. We're 500. Right. We're still very much.
Yes, I don't think that they're going to be an 0-4 team, but I think they could really realistically be a 1-3 team after 4 games, which is dramatically different than 2-2. Right? It's just one game, but, you say 2-2, you say 1-3. It sounds like it's a 4-game difference.
I mean, that would be worse than they started in 2018. When they went 6-10, and that would be worse than they started in 2017 when they went 5-11.
What does that tell you?
It tells me that I don't think it's going to happen. That's what it tells me.
No, try again. What does that tell you?
What does that tell me? That it would be a worse start than 2017 or 2018?
Yes.
It doesn't tell me anything.
No, it does tell you something. It tells you it's not how you start, it's how you finish. Okay? That's what it tells you, Zach. Write that down. Write that down. Get your pen out.
I mean, that's inherently true. I thought there was like a specific detail I should be searching here for, phrase.
It tells you like, you know, it doesn't matter how you start the season. Like it's 16 games for a reason, you know, so like you could start 1-3 and still finish better than you did, you know, in 17 and 18.
Sure.
So I think we got really excited the last couple years. Whenever, you know.
Oh, that 3-1 start.
Right. I mean, you get excited about it, and then next thing you know, it's like, wait, what just happened here? So, I think.
The Broncos really finished 2-10 on the back half of 2017. They were 3-1. We were like, we came in here. I remember after the Dallas win, the 42-17 win. I remember asking you the question.
Some people, I think that was when people wanted to. Give Trevor the stocking full of cash.
The stocking stuffer.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and extend him right now.
Well.
But he played great. The Broncos played great. They just whipped up on the Cowboys. Zeke got held to his lowest rushing yards ever. And
1 yard per carry.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, everybody was like.
And Trevor threw 4 touchdowns.
Right.
Threw 4 tutties. And I was like, who is this dude? Let's put him in the car with Peter King. Let's go for a little stroll.
Yes. Yeah, remember that, huh?
Scott Van Pelt, the Sports Center at Night, Trevor Siemian.
That's right.
Everyone, meet Trevor Siemian.
The next star. The good old days. That was the good old days.
And it turned out that year that really a part of the reason that we got tricked that year is because we thought the Dallas Cowboys were going to be some Super Bowl contender, and they were, you know, a 9-7 football team.
Yeah. But I look at 4-0 to start, you know, what Nick Ferguson said. He's predicting 4-0. And I don't know. I mean, this team starts 4-0. I mean, that would blow me away.
You want to be blown away right now?
Uh-oh. What do we got?
This is Nick Ferguson saying that the Broncos could be 5 wins better this year than last year based off the coaching staff. Check this out.
So your reason for optimism stems largely from Vic Fangio and this staff. You believe this staff, this head coach, automatically improves this team by what?
I mean,
one win, 2 wins, 3 wins, 4 wins, what?
I would dare to say 5 wins.
5 wins?
Because here's what you have to understand.
They were 6-10 last year. You're saying just because of the coaches, this has the potential to be an 11-win team.
Exactly.
Okay.
And here's the reason for what I'm saying, and as crazy as that sounds, you know, I'm a firm believer in attitude reflecting leadership.
Okay. Where do I start? He said something about being crazy. Yeah. I think that was a good comment there.
Okay.
That is a little crazy, Nick. And then the last thing he kind of lost me on when he said the leadership thing that he said.
Attitude. I think attitude affects leadership, reflects leadership.
I don't know how that translates to wins, you know, to 5 more wins. Now, you're going to change the culture. I think Vic and this staff will be an upgrade, but they're not out there making plays. And I think the roster has been upgraded. And I'm more optimistic about this team, but 5 wins? 5? Let's you know, if they get 2.
That's a third of the schedule.
Right. I mean, that's a 11-5 football. In this division? Come on. No. No chance.
Nikki Jabala of The Athletic and good friend of the show stops by here on Stokely and Zach. We're just having the conversation based off another one that was happening this morning where Nick Ferguson was hanging out with Mike Evans on the morning show, and he was just beaming with optimism, and he says he believes the Broncos can start 4-0 and furthermore believes that the Broncos can be as good as an 11-5 team this year. What say you?
I don't have quite that level of optimism. I think they'll be better last year, but I don't know. There's still so many question marks with this team that I'm not completely sold on, you know, this notion of seeing them win that many games. They could very well surprise. I'm just not sure with this team.
Nikki, now that the offseason is over, you know, the Broncos got a little break here before training camp. What was your big, you know, you were there every single day. What was your biggest takeaway from the Broncos' offseason?
I thought one of the biggest ones, it was mainly about Vic and the way he ran practice, the way he related to players. I was actually surprised. I mean, I say that because I didn't really know what to expect. Bringing in a coach who has, you know, decades of experience as being a coordinator and mainly a defensive guy coming in as a first-year head coach. How would he take to this new position? How would he structure practices? How would he work with players? And, I mean, it was pretty impressive. I mean, players really gravitated toward him, the defensive guys especially. But I also like the way he ran practices. I mean, it was nonstop. And, you know, the way he mixed in situational football, I thought that was, it was different from what we've seen in recent years, and it seemed to be really effective because guys talked about it. They said it helped them really learn the new offense because they were really thrown in there from the get-go. So that was one of the biggest things for me.
Nikki Jabala of The Athletic. Nikki, on Friday afternoon, I was doing the show with Orlando. We were on the air, and you reposted the video of Emmanuel Sanders running routes out there at Dove Valley on Friday afternoon. I was highly impressed. It looks like he's going to be a full go, at least from just where I'm sitting right now on June 11th. It looks like he's going to be a full go in 5 weeks for training camp. How does having Emmanuel Sanders in top form affect your outlook of this Broncos offense in 2019?
Well, I think he's critical for this offense, for the team as a whole. That receiving room is pretty young. I think when they were, they had to play without Emmanuel or DT, it was a bit of a struggle late in the season, especially for those guys to figure out, you know, taking on the top cornerbacks of opposing teams. So he's critical to this offense. There's no doubt about it. I'm curious to see how they ease him in. He may be cleared, but I know they don't want to just throw him in there. Full go initially, given the significance of the injury. But he does look good out there. He's posted videos almost daily anymore, and he looks like he's able to make the cuts and go full speed. I'm no doctor, so I don't know how far along he truly is. But even just seeing what he's able to do, what, 6 months after Achilles surgery is just remarkable.
He looks like he's really close. I'm sure they're going to have a good plan for him in training camp, but he's looking good. So that's great news for the Broncos, obviously. Nikki, looking at this Chris Harris situation now that it's finally resolved, the Broncos have him locked up for 1 year. He's happy. I think the Broncos are happy. How big of a deal was that to get this thing done before training camp?
I think it was big for both sides. I mean, once you hit mandatory minicamp and then training camp, you know, Chris was facing the prospect of, you know, getting fined for missing time. And we see how many guys are now holding out this year. It seems like, you know, a good number of players compared to past years as they seek new contracts. So I think it was big for them, especially as they're learning a new defense, to have that key piece of your defense back there and really having time to get acclimated and learn the system. So I think it was good timing. It was necessary. And then we'll kind of see what they do at season's end. And, you know, it'll be mainly dependent on how he plays and how they feel about his future given his age and if there are any health concerns at that point.
Nikki, great stuff as always. Cannot wait for training camp. We're not going to have to wait long. Just I believe it's under 5 weeks away or something like that.
Yeah.
Right around the corner. Cannot wait to be out there every day and be able to draw some more conclusions or get closer to what we deem as conclusions once they put the pads on. Can't wait. Good stuff from you. We'll do it again next week.
All right. Sounds good, guys.
All right. See you. There she goes, Nikki Jabala of The Athletic, dropping by Stokely and Zach. Would you anticipate any restriction on Emmanuel to start camp?
Sure. Yeah, I think there should be, even if he's ready to go. You got to ease into this thing, okay? I had no restriction. So it was just going out there, practicing, and I think 2 or 3 days in, quad, pop. So I think that was the best thing for me because it kind of pushed me back, made me take a step back, and allowed me some extra time just to get healthy. But I think with Emmanuel, even if he's ready to go and he's full speed and feels great, you still have to have a plan in place. Like, hey, you're going to be practicing, you know, for the first week every other day type of thing. And we're going to still monitor your reps.
Mm.
Because you just have to be really, really careful with this thing because you don't want to have a setback in training camp. He's looking good. He's feeling good. And you want him. You want to take the big picture. We want him playing his best football in December. You know, I don't really care about July or August. No, in December, we want this guy healthy. And so that's what you have to look at, the big picture here. And it's a marathon, not a sprint.
And I wonder, to that point, if whoever, whether it's John, whether it's Vic, whether it's Emmanuel, whether it's Greek, is watching what happened last night to Kevin Durant and sort of gives you pause for just a second of a guy that says, hey, I want to play, I'm ready. Training staff is checking him out saying, yeah, he looks ready to play. And obviously the situations couldn't be any more different because we're talking about training camp to the NBA Finals. But at the same time,
everybody blaming the Warriors for this.
I
see a lot of people blaming, you know, you heard Charles Barkley, you know, he said he's blaming the Warriors for KD getting hurt. You know, Jalen Rose said concern about KD's best interest is phony.
Well, I think Jalen's take was about from the fans. Yeah. Barkley's was directly to the Warriors saying that you mishandled this thing, that they just did not put him in a great position. And
look, it's game five.
It's game five of the NBA Finals.
He wants to play.
Right. So what are you going to say? Yeah, you want to play. It's
game
five,
but
we're not
letting you play.
How would that go over?
Exactly. And it's a fine line that you have to walk. You know, he's tired of sitting out.
Sure.
It's the finals. And you know he wants to play. And so if he thinks he's good enough to go, he's going to play. And you think the Warriors should say, no?
I can't imagine.
We're not going to let you play, KD. How is that going to go over? And he's going to look at him like, really? I'm fine. Do you think he's going to re-sign with them in the offseason? If he says, I'm ready to rock and roll, you're not letting me play?
Yeah, if that's the temperature on the way out.
They're going to tell him, yeah, of course, go play. And you hope for the best. Look, it's an injury. It's sports. It happens, right? He's been out for over a month.
So he was ready to go. He played. He got hurt, unfortunately. But that's sports. That stuff happens all the time. It's just a bummer that it happened to KD in the finals in game five and on that stage and to such a great player. But this stuff happens all the time. You can't blame the team and how they handle the situation because they didn't rush him back. He had a calf strain. He was out over a month. I mean, that's not rushing a guy back. You think they told KD, yeah, you're playing tonight, and he didn't feel good, and he went out there and played? I mean, so let's stop blaming the Warriors for this. It's sports, okay? It happens. There's blame. Nobody deserves blame. Nobody, okay? I think that's the point being missed here. There's no blame. Nobody's to blame, Zach. Don't point your fingers here.
You and I are synced up on this one.
Good.
We
don't like to blame people.
We are not, however, on the Broncos schedule, and I want to get back to that, and we'll do it.
Are you going
to
come at me?
I may.
Bring it.
I may. Keep your hands up, and we will do that next.